Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige. Today's bonus episode is a bit different than usual. However, this is the best way to kick off spooky season a little early. I was able to sit down virtually with a few cast members of the Netflix movie 1BR. Producer Alok Mishra, Clayton Hoffman, who plays Lester, and Naomi Grossman, who plays Janice. There are spoilers galore in this episode, so if you haven't seen the movie yet, I suggest you do before listening, unless spoilers don't bother you. Without further ado, here's the most fun interview ever.
Hey, I have Alok here, and I have Naomi and Clayton. And do y'all want to properly introduce yourselves to everyone?
Ladies first.
Oh, that would be me. Naomi Grossman. I play Janice in the film 1BR, which we're here to talk about tonight.
And hello, my name is Clayton Hoff, and I play Lester in the film.
And I'm Alok Mishra, a douchebag producer.
Extraordinaire.
You can't see that I have money grubbing hands, and I'm making this like kind of, this physical signal of money grubbing hands. Yes, that's who I am.
Awesome. Well, first of all, when I tell you this movie was so well done that it had me guessing the whole time, and I'm usually like, I've got this figured out. You know, I know what's going to happen, but this one, it kept me guessing, and I was wrong a lot, and I like that because the unpredictability factor of it was amazing.
Did you watch the trailer beforehand, or did you just watch it straight up?
I just jumped right into the movie.
We've been finding
that's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah.
What Naomi says for sure. We've been finding a lot of people say that we tried really hard to cut a really good trailer for this movie. And I used to actually work in market research for film, so I tested movies and I also tested like trailers, for example. And the whole thing about a lot of trailers is they give away all the shit, right? We can curse on this, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. We're gonna curse a lot. No, Naomi's
you're
mom.
You're gonna curse a lot.
You're gonna curse a lot. I'm gonna wince a lot.
Well, how about we do it different tonight, Naomi? So here's the thing. Naomi's mom listens to all of these things, right? All these podcasts, whatever it is. She listens to. She's a nice lady, but apparently I offend her every night. Like,
I can't. She knows you're so smart, and so she expects more of you, Alok.
Yeah, so does my parents. I was supposed to be a doctor, but, you know, whatever. Anyway,
how did you get into producing?
Well, I mean, like, I was trying to say that I tested movies for 18 years and I did market research. And so when we're talking about the trailer for a second, let's get back to that for a second. We tried to make it so that it was a titillating trailer, but it didn't give away the whole story, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, we would basically give away like little glimpses of things and make it real fast. So maybe you were, you know, you in an emotional level, you thought it was interesting, but you weren't really necessarily like, it wasn't, the whole plot wasn't given away. And then you couldn't quite remember what you'd seen necessarily. Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
That was the whole idea behind it. But what we found out is that people go in cold. And that's what I would tell all your listenership is to just go in cold. We had a great, you know, guy who cut our trailer, and he was a very sweet guy and amazing guy, but I feel bad to hurt him, you know, whatever, like to tell you that.
Yeah.
But just go in cold. That's the best idea. Yeah. So that's one thing aside. The other thing, though, is how we became, you know, stumbled upon this this project was that I live in Los Angeles, and my wife, you know, grew up in New Jersey, and she grew up with our writer director David Marmer. His manager and my wife went to high school together. So we
small
basically
world.
Had a, Yeah, right. That's what I mean. That's what it is. It's all about connection. You know, right? But we had one of those douchebag lunches, and my wife actually came along to this. Like, she doesn't. She's just like, I'm a producer. Well, you're a manager, you know. And he was just like, you know, you talk about yourselves and all the bullshit you're doing. And then he basically said, hey, I have two scripts for you. I was like, oh, great, send them to me. And I never read them for 6 months. I never read them because I'm a douchebag like that. And but I was working on the project to be, you know, defensive of myself. And what happened was that I just didn't have time for anything else. And then when that project fell through, I was like, holy shit, I need to find something. And one of the scripts was, of the two, was David Marmer, our lovely writer director, his script. So I met with him. He was a lovely person, incredibly intelligent. This guy, you know, he never likes to talk about it, but he went to Harvard and he also went to USC for also a directing graduate program. And we had the same sensibilities and we met up and I was like, oh my gosh, we're first time producers. My producing partner, Shane Vorster, we have a production company called Malevolent Films. And we met up and we all got along and I was like, we're first-time producers. You're a first-time, you know, writer-director for a feature. What could go wrong?
Yeah, everything.
Damn person. With consistency.
Oh my gosh! So, how did the concept of the movie start? What were the inspirations for the movie?
Oh my God, we found someone with worse internet than Alok. It's so exciting.
I usually have the worst internet, but it's okay.
You do, Alok. Your internet's the worst.
This is audio. This is an audio thing anyways for her, so it's not going to be.
All good. That was exciting.
You tell the story, Naomi. You know the story, Naomi. Tell the story.
The question was about inspirations for the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, David Marmer is from the Bay Area, and when he moved down to Los Angeles, he basically moved into an apartment building not unlike the one that you saw. And, you know, LA can be a really isolating place. Like, it's full of all these sort of, like, wannabes, yeah. You know, people, like, pursuing their dreams, like, you know, out-of-towners, kind of... looking for validation and you know, and he was one of them. I was one of them too. Alok really wasn't one of them because he's from here, but maybe he was at age 14 when he came here from Mississippi. I don't know. In any case, I can speak for David Marmer that when he moved to LA, he moved into a kind of creepy complex with a cat he was not allowed to have. I think there were other moments in the movie that, you know, or rather he talked about just recently, and I was like, really, that's real? Like, there was a really an old lady, you know, like an Edith sort of muse that, you know, they didn't like kill or anything, but I think he you know, he that's where she came from. He spent you know, a few nights like listening to the pipes, thinking, oh my God, like I just signed a year lease, like am I ever going to sleep again? The Jerry and Janice characters, that is the, you know, apartment managers or cult leaders, were like a old Hungarian couple, which had I known that, I swear to God, I would have made this movie like the next Borat, because I would have gone full retard with that. I like, yeah. Nothing I love more than like a thick Eastern European accent. So it's probably just as well he did not go there, because that would have been a very different movie. But yeah, so anyway, like I said, I think the inspiration only went so far. It was really like his, you know, imagination after a while.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I can relate. Like I said, I was one of those people too that moved out here, and it was kind of like, it's a weird place.
Yeah.
I would also add that the other part of it that's interesting is in terms of the cults he sort of was inspired by, let's say.
Uh-huh.
One of the big ones was this one called Synanon, right? Mm-hmm. It was a thing where it was originally started as a drug rehab. And, you know, back in the 60s, it was sort of looked down upon to be a drug. You were a lost soul, right? Yeah. And these people were like, okay, listen, you're not a lost soul. We're going to help you. And so they started this thing. And the government actually would send them people. And like, it was a thing where it was a legitimate, you know, kind of like treatment center, which then, as most things became sort of perverted and into almost a cult of personality. And like, you know, they moved up north and, you know, people died. But the one thing that's interesting when they moved up north was they got into the whole idea that you can never really be cured of being on drugs. And so you need to live with this, right? And so you need to live with this, and not only live with this, but move up north, like from Los Angeles to San Francisco. We're gonna have a huge ranch or something like this, right?
Yeah.
And so what happened with that actually at the end of the day was that they got very abusive, and there were some people that died, and there's like a TV movie about it, and you know, all these things, like when cult of personality goes wrong, happens, like that's what happened. But what's an interesting fun fact is that George Lucas, a young spunky filmmaker named George Lucas, was shooting his first movie, THX 1138. And he needed a lot of bald extras. What they did at one point was that everyone's the same, we're shaving our heads. And so a lot of the extras, if not most all of them, are from the Synanon cult, right? For that movie, for George Lucas's first movie and stuff like
that's
that.
That's insane.
Right? Like, it's a crazy kind of fact, but that's what happened with that. And so, yeah, so that was a huge influence. Obviously, there's, you know, notes of, you know, different cults. We don't want to say Scientology, but yeah, maybe, whatever. I don't want to say that because poor Naomi Grossman. Poor Naomi Grossman lives, like, literally down the street from them, like, and she drives her bike, you know, here and again. And we don't want her to disappear. We would like to keep
we don't.
National fucking treasure, right? So there we are.
Thanks. I appreciate it. We love Scientology.
Yes, they're the best. I mean, are they though?
Yeah, we love it.
It's funny though, you know, the extras in our movie were also in a cult of sorts, and that is the cult of Alok Mishra's friend circle. Literally, and not
the
just
best kind.
Really, anyone at all associated with the movie. I mean, the movie was like actually shot in an actual like functioning apartment complex. So occasionally you'll see an actual neighbor, you know what I mean? Somebody like off to walk the dog. In fact, occasionally, because there was a dog, barking, ruining the shot because you couldn't have pets in the complex. Uh-huh. We'd have like, you know,
that's wild.
Alok would like
$20. We'll go knock on their door and be like, "Hello, hey, here's $20. Would you go walk your dog right now, please? Could you just do that for us? Like, that'd be awesome. Thank you so much. It's amazing. Thank you. Could you do this?
We were shooting like the climax of the movie when Nicole comes out with the gun in the courtyard and she's pointing it at everybody like, get back,
Oh my god.
And the owner wasn't there for the longest time. Like, how can we get this dog? Like, we almost had a PA break into the apartment, like, trying to jimmy the lock.
Allegedly.
But truly, getting back to the extras, like, if you watch the movie, you will see Alok, like, half a dozen times. Like, pour yourself a tall one, and literally, every time you see him, take a drink, but make sure it's tall, because you're going to be empty by the end, okay? Like,
I might be dead by the
end. My own defense, I didn't want to be in this film at all. This is not my thing. The season actors that went to Northwestern, like Naomi Grossman and Clayton Hoff, they deserve to be like the film focus of any kind of thing. But we didn't have any money. And so what would happen invariably, they'd be like, hey, Alok and Shane, my producing partner, Shane Morrister, we have a company called Malevolent Films, to hype that again. We were movers number one and movers number two. So when you see us throughout the movie, we're usually moving things, frankly.
I was going to say, were you in like the party scenes or like, I gotta go back and see.
He's in everything.
It makes it fun for you to watch it again to go find out and do a drinking game as Naomi Grossman.
Exactly.
Right? Clayton is telling you the same
thing. Surprised there's not like scenes where Alok has like a mustache or like or, you know what I mean? Like, it's so
It was so sad because it would be like this. I'd be sitting like, you know, as a good producer would do, you sit at Video Village, you watch the scene being filmed and you're like, all right, that's great. Oh, they forgot this. Or, you know, you try to be that guy. But then invariably it'd be a thing where they'd be like, all right, we don't have enough extras. Alok, get out there. Shane, get out there. And like, and they're like, why are you wearing t-shirts with logos? And they'd be bugging us with this. I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to be in this movie. You know you're going to be in this movie every day. You know this. Well, fuck your bullshit. You need to fucking wear a black t-shirt to work, jackass.
Naomi, your mom is going to love this.
She's gonna love it.
Sorry. Here's the thing. Sorry, Mom.
My mom, this is actually a tender issue for my mom because my mom was on set. My mom never visits, by the way. I've not seen my mother since December. And yet, the two times she visited that year were the times we were shooting this movie. And the reason being, one, we shot over Christmas because Alok is a money-grubbing producer and it's cheap to shoot that. And, you know, he could get locations.
Cheap rates on shit. Cheap rates, right?
Yeah. Well, not only that, nobody else has anything else to do. You know what I mean? We're either, like, sitting around getting fat, like, with our families, or work, right?
Yeah, so to be truthful, we didn't actually shoot over Christmas. Like, we actually, like, you know, on December 24th to, like, you know, I don't know, like.
They wrapped us
27th, early. December 27th.
Yeah, whatever. Give you a break. I mean, it's like, you know, not Boxing Day and Christmas and whatever. But the point of it, though, is that you can get people for cheap. And what Naomi is not actually saying, I don't think I said already, was that she, when we had to do reshoots, right? We shot for 15 days initially, then we shot for 4 days for our reshoots. And when we did our reshoots, we actually had to shoot, we couldn't get the band back together, so to speak, because like Naomi Grossman, working actor, she's doing American Horror Story, like, you know, for the third time that season, let's say, right? Apocalypse, yeah. Right? And then, you know, Taylor Nichols is doing PEN 15, and so he's busy, and then our cinematographer's busy. All the bullshit kind of combines into a perfect storm of being able to shoot in September of 2018. Like, we'd shot in the winter of, like, you know, the Christmas of 2017, and 2018 is when we're going to shoot again. And it just so happens Miss Naomi Grossman is nominated for an Oscar. An Emmy. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And like, how many times does this happen in your life, right? And
yeah.
This lady, Naomi Grossman, is a friend for 20 years. We've been friends for so long. And that's why she did the movie in the first place. But that's also why she came back to do the movie in the second place. And she's just like, listen, this is like, I mean, it's obviously it's her time to shine, right? But
yeah. She
doesn't get to necessarily because we're like, we got to shoot within like 3 days, 4 days within this time span of your amazing time to shine. And she's like, you're a son of a bitch, Mishra. Like, you know, like, I fucking hate you, but I love you too. I'm going to come back and do this.
It was really my time to like go to all those gifting suites and like grab up all this free shit. Mama hates that. You know what I mean? You know, the last time I went to one of those gifting suites, I got a trip to Jamaica, which I took her on. So that's why she's pissed, probably. No, turns out, so here we are. I'm like, team player, fine. I'll be there, of course. But, you know, my mom, my mom is flying in that day. Like, can you pick my mom up at LAX? Like,
no,
that
good.
Way, if you're at LAX, you can't be on screen. That's good, right? Anyway, turns out, so my mom was on set, and it turns out she was, like, the only person that was, like, on set that was not actually used as an extra at one time or another. Only because she had a full head of white hair and looked strangely like Mrs. Stanhope. So, again, just like we couldn't have, like, a dog and a cat, you know? We couldn't have, like, two white-haired ladies. Like, we already killed one off. Like, it would be confusing. Like, oh, we're going to let that one be here? Anyway, so, yeah.
Well, I guess one question is, how do you decide, Alok, and the director, I guess, would probably have a hand in this, but how do you say, like, okay, Naomi is going to be perfect for this part and Clayton's going to be perfect for this part? Like, how do you decide on who to pick?
Well, I think an interesting answer to that question is to sort of do from my perspective, a producer perspective, and to do Clayton's perspective as an actor, actually, because this is a very interesting question. I'll tell you this, and it's a good story too. So, from my perspective, we were the director, Dave Marmer, and I were fighting over, and also the other producers were fighting over who he wanted for the Lester character. And what happened was that, like, essentially, like, David wanted this older kind of looking dude, and a friend of his, I'm sure he's a good actor, blah, 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 could do it. And I was like, this is the wrong person for this role. Because spoiler alert, like, you know, at some point, like, Nicole has to marry him, like, Sarah has to marry him, right?
Yeah.
Like, how miserable a situation is this for this poor woman to, like, not only be indoctrinated in this cult, but then, like, okay, you gotta fuck this guy every night, like, terrible situation to be in. And I was like, we were fighting back and forth about this. So here's the funny fact is that Clayton Hoff doesn't go on, he's gone on Facebook more than I've ever seen him since
our
movie.
A lot more now, all right? Because I realized the value in it.
Yeah. But before that, he never did, right? And, you know, Clayton and I knew each other socially and different things, you know. But I've never, I honestly, you're just in the mix of things. You don't think of certain people or whatever. But Clayton had just gotten married and fucking finally put something on Facebook. And it's a lovely picture with his wife is gorgeous from Brazil, da da da. Like, I mean, he's the luckiest man alive. And he's like, you know, he is also a good looking cat himself, right? Like,
thank you.
So there you are. But the point of it is that he actually puts himself on Facebook for fucking once, like after like, you know, a year and a half or something of not seeing him. And so I'm like, you know, creature of that, you know, whatever. And I'm like, holy fuck, that's fucking Lester. Fucking yeah. Clayton Hoff, it's fucking Lester. And I'm like, we have to get him. And like, I basically call him, I think even, and I'm like, hey, listen, I need you to read for this. And he's like, well, I'm doing an acting class. And then I got like, you know, my day job. And I don't know. I'm like, fucking, you have to do this, you know? And
so yeah.
I get two o'clock in the morning or something. Him and his wife, his lovely wife, his lovely Brazilian, beautiful wife, his new wife, then start basically, she helps him do the sort of like self-tape. And he does it overnight. Mm-hmm. And then we wake up in the morning on Sunday morning. I see the video, the self-tape like audition. And I'm like, that's the guy. That's what I said. That's the fucking guy. And I sent it to the director.
After. Right away.
But.
Like, after watching the movie, I can't imagine anybody else playing Lester. No.
So good. He's so good, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm not trying to, like, scratch, you know, pat myself on the back or whatever. I'm like...
Good call.
But I won that argument. And not only did I win the argument, but, like, it paid off in spades. Like, it was, like, literally, like, we basically all watched his self-tape on Sunday. And there was a little back and forth and whatever else. And I was like, this is the fucking guy. It's undeniable, right?
Yeah.
And I think so in the meantime, he's flown out to like New Orleans because he's like, you know, like getting married and having parties and whatever. And like, he's sitting on Bourbon Street when I call him at like 11 o'clock at night.
Frenchman Street.
Frenchman Street. Thank you. I didn't want to interrupt the story.
You're like tourists. I'm like,
yeah, you're right.
Not on that tourist BS, okay? Not Bourbon.
I got you.
He's on Frenchman Street.
Exactly, sir.
I'm like, got it. And he's like listening and he's like, he's dancing around the music and it's like the amazing news of whatever. And I hope it was a nice wedding present in that regard.
Oh, thank you.
So that was my point of view. So Taylor, sorry. Clayton, tell your point of view.
So, you know, sometimes we're just born into a role and, you know, Lester is a creepy cat and, you know, we work with what we've got, you know? So I was born with this amazing face right here that totally fits that creepy cat mold. And I mean it in the best sense. Trust me. This is a business we're in to where somebody's like, oh my God, you look like a serial killer. Thank you. That's so nice of you to say. So, I mean, the story, Alok pretty much hit on the story of it. You know, Alok and I, we went back, we knew each other. He saw my wedding picture you know, stayed up all night. Literally, I was up till like 3:30 in the morning with my wife filming this self-tape. And, you know, it happened so fast. It was such a complex character. It's like, what's going on? You know, I only get the sides, you know, which are these small sides. Scenes I got to audition with were the scene where I talked to Sarah in the beginning, when I tell her she should read this book, you know, after she just got into the apartment complex. And then the other scene at the end, towards the end where we're in the bedroom talking, I'm telling her that this could be a good life. And, you know, when you have something so so deep, so meaty, so juicy, and so little time to work on it, you just have to keep it simple. You have to keep it as simple as possible. And I don't think I kept it as simple as I could, but I kept it simple enough and just really tapped into that character's sadness of, you know, he'd lost his wife. He's somebody who's been here, who fought, who didn't want to be here, who is a survival. So he has this deep innate sadness and, you know, I was able to just get on board with that and connect with that and bring that to the role. That was something unique I was able to bring was my own perspective on that, my own sadness to that. So, thanks, yes. Alok, for looking at Facebook and seeing me. And it was a lot of fun.
We were only so lucky that it happened the way that it was. Like, in life, right? Like, I know Naomi Grossman for 20 years. And I've been like, you know, hey, Naomi, what's going on with you? And she's like, well, I'm doing my one-woman show and no one's like looking at me right now. And then she gets an American Horror Story. And like, first off, her one-woman show was amazing and everyone loved it. And her second one-woman show is even better, right? And she's going to do another one she'll tell you about later, I'm sure. But I'm saying it all kind of builds up in a way, right? Like, you know, these people, you know, you know who can be really good in what you're going to do, you know? And so it all happened in a great way. But listen, this is your interview. You more questions for you. You go ahead.
I was just wondering, like, how long was it that you had the scripts before you had to go and do this? So, like, how long did it take y'all to memorize lines? And were you all in it at first? Like, or did you think, oh, I'll just sit on this a little bit and think about it?
I literally got the script. I wasn't able to read the script until after I auditioned for it. And I read it on my flight to and from New Orleans. And after I booked it, I think I was on set literally, I think it was almost the next week. So I didn't have a lot of time with it. And it was just, you know, keep it simple as you can, find something you connect with and run with that. And that was my journey with it.
I would say my journey with it was I read the script very early on. Like, I want to say it was maybe right after that douchebag meeting. And Alok was like, what do you think?
It was after I actually read the script, which is probably around March, I want to say. So I then gave it to you around probably then.
Right, which means I had a good like 9 months ahead of time. I was like, yes, love it. Like, sign me up. No hesitation. And then he called, like, I want to say November, he calls me with an audition. I'm like, what? I thought I had this part. Okay. And I do believe it was just like logistics. I think he needed me to meet David, you know.
Formality.
It was nothing. But I was, you know, it's at the same time, it's, you know, I always want to make the first, you know, best first impression. So it was like, all of a sudden I was like cramming for this thing that I kind of had kind of taken for granted. And actually, I'm not going to lie, the audition was kind of hilarious because, again, Alok, not only producing this movie and, you know, the extra and like, I mean, mover number one or whatever. I mean, you name it. He's like doing everything for it. Like, he's like picking up like feminine energy drink for our, you know, super diva lead at the time. She was later replaced. You know, to this, he was the reader in the audition. Like, he's literally, talk about one man shows. I shouldn't say that because obviously there were many other people involved. I mean, Shane Forster was amazing. He's her, his co-producer, David Marmer, obviously. I mean, there was a whole, it takes a village. But Alok was definitely holding up his share of the weight. Like, bravo to you.
Or retardedly so. I mean, so much as this. I was her reader. She's going to say this right now. I'm going to defend myself immediately. I am, I'm not an actor, but I was just trying to read the lines against her. And I was not. I was not good.
Here's the thing. And actually, honestly, I remember like in acting classes, like doing a practice sort of exercise where we're like, what if you get a really bad reader? Like, how does it go? You know? And so sure, like I was prepared for this, but like Alok, okay, here's the thing. I know Alok for so long. Like, I have definitely been up like in the, like late at night for like drunken Trivial Pursuit where Alok is like reading the questions and he will literally like ask the question so jacked up that you have no, you might know the answer, but just by virtue, like the way he read it, like fast and slow, like, it's like, what? Like, you have no, like, good luck to you, right? And so basically that's how like we did in this read. This audition was just like bonkers because I was like, I thought I had this part. Now I'm all stressed out about it. And but I'm also like reading opposite like one of my very close friends. And yet my close friend seems like he's trying to sabotage me. Like, he thinks this is like a
case, not the case.
He's acting like we're like playing drunken Trivial Pursuit. Like, what is happening?
I mean, anyway, that's what she thought, frankly. And that's, you know, whatever. That's her opinion.
That's the way he reads.
I mean, I was like trying to deliver the lines as I thought they were and whatever. But I've learned now that I will never do this again. And Naomi Grossman will hopefully be in all of our movies, whatever it is. Like, I don't even want to parse words. I wanted to get her in everything we can do. That's what I'm saying. Right.
And if it's a good enough role, I'll come for the chemistry read, in which case I'll be the reader. You don't even have to do that, Alok. I'll just be there for it.
Well, again.
But like, he has a baby. He has a 2-year-old who I swear to God, I pity every bedtime because I don't know how she listens to him. Like, he reads like so jacked up. I can't even tell you.
I think the word she's looking for is retardedly, but I mean, we can't say that word. It's not anymore. But Clayton, please.
Just going to defend you, Alok. I was going to say you're an amazing storyteller. I never had the pleasure of reading with you. I just always imagine you'd be a great reader because you understand story so well.
And I love to tell stories, obviously.
You do, and you're great at it. Like, I could, all this shade that Naomi's throwing about at you about being a bad reader, I can't see it. That's all I can say is I can't see it.
I want to say this. We don't know that Lester is dead. He's dead yet. This is Paige's.
I probably interview. Just shot myself in the foot. Like, oh. Wow.
All right, you did it. Of course, you didn't. Name me. Poor Paige is trying to control this like crazy zoo interview that we're doing.
No.
She's like lost control or whatever. I feel bad. I just.
No, to I love it. You know, I always wonder, especially in like horror, American Horror Story, and this. In this movie, like, how do you get in that headspace to play such a character?
Well, I mean, it kind of goes, it's what I majored in, like, that's acting, you know, you get into that world. So in this particular case, in a way, I had since March, but then, you know, kind of like Clayton, I also, you know, I read the script in March, but of course I forgot it between, you know, April and November. And then all of a sudden I had like November, December to, you know, remember it again. But, you know, in each case, it's different. You know what I mean? In the case of, like, if, for example, American Horror Story, Asylum, I had a good month of preparation, which is significant, actually, for television. But that was because let's face it, my prosthetics itself took weeks and weeks to make, but that time I had to, really research Schlitzie, the inspiration behind Pepper, and really master his, walk and talk and kind of the physicality. And then I went ahead and I met with a coach, which I always do. And, he and I kind of created my inner story. Because you can't just be a facade, something underneath it all, of course, yeah. as well. I think all of us have our own process. I know I tend to be a very physical actor, and I tend to go outside in. Everyone's different, but, in every show or project is different. Like I said, I think that month I had with Pepper, pre alien invasion Pepper, was really luxurious to have a whole month. Then post alien abduction Pepper, I had a week, nothing, which was a lot, especially given that it was a whole new character. And then I actually had some dialogue. In this yeah. case, it felt like, on one case, I had so much time because I had since March. And yet, in a way, it felt much more crazy and rushed because it was like, oh, right, we're doing this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like this concentrated month of just doing 1BR. It was more, and especially, Alok tells a story about how they lost, a lot of their major leads, the week before we started shooting. And so I think a lot of the major casting decisions were coming down to the very, very end. And so it was, it was kind of fast and furious. In this case, I didn't have a ton of dialogue, so it didn't matter. I could have handled, they could give me pages on the day. And in fact, I think they did, especially for the rewrites. They were like, oh, here's some lines, and that's typical. That's just sort of actor's life. So
yeah, and I watched it with my boyfriend, and I was telling him, she doesn't have a lines, but when she's there, she has a huge presence, and something's going on and something's about to go down.
I'm not gonna pat myself on the back here, but I do believe that this could be my superpower. Before I had any success in Hollywood, I worked as a background extra, I did everything. I drove the Red Bull car. I danced for money at bar mitzvahs. You name it. But among the ding dong jobs I did, I worked, doing background. And I swear to God, I was the worst extra ever because I was so big. I kind of make an impression no matter what. There would be times when they would be like, hey, can you go even further back? Can you actually turn around? Can you just go, actually just take a break? It was and I swear to God, you can actually see it in action. If you watch this movie, She's All That.
Yeah.
A movie with Freddie Prinze Jr. You will see me. I am in the very last shot of the film. The scene is he's being actually, graduating from high school, and he's butt naked in the graduation chair. I'm actually seated right behind him. And come on. First of all, I went to acting school. Okay. You're not going to put a camera in front of me and have me not mug a little. Right. But seriously, if there's a naked man in front of you, you're going to give it a look, right? So sure enough, if you just Google it, Naomi Grossman, She's All That, images, you will find a picture of me with my eyebrow up going woo, And like, I'm like an extra, like I'm supposed to just
I have never heard this before in my life, by the
me
way.
Me neither. And I haven't heard this either.
I am transfixed now. I had to, on the other end of it, I tested, like, you know, She's All That, like, over in New Jersey in fucking Ridgefield Park, the shittiest part of New Jersey. No offense, New Jersey. But I'm just saying, like, I now have an interesting
have to go back
to the whole thing. Oh my gosh, I have to go watch this fucking movie again.
Yeah, yeah.
I am definitely popping a look. Like, I am not gonna miss whatever Friends with Freddie Jr.
I'm gonna tell David Marmer about this, because he does not know this. I guarantee you this. Like, this is gonna be a thing we all discover together.
But wow. I swear, wow. that is me. Like, I was a terrible extra. I do not disappear, you know. And it actually, I'll be honest, and then I'll stop monopolizing here. It plagued me for quite a while, like, as an actress, because when you're first starting out in Hollywood, you're sort of relegated to those, like, you know, nurse number two to the left, like, roles, like, just these little supporting parts, these tiny little co-stars, where they basically need you to support the star, you know, like, you know, bring the give the doctor a scalpel, right?
Those yeah.
And I could never get them, because I'd be like, scalpel doctor? You know what I mean? I was so big. I was so much. And they were just like, no, go away. It wasn't until, like, I swear to God, Pepper was this, like, perfect storm of a role, because she was small enough that they were going to give it to a kind of a no name, right? Because if you're going to pay for, like, a Lady Gaga or Kathy Bates, you're not going to cover their face to the point of being unrecognizable, right? You're paying to recognize them. So they needed a kind of a nobody, right? But they also needed someone that was expressive enough to really act through that makeup, which is me. So, you know, in so many ways, like, this, it was really, like, it was perfect. It was perfect for, it was perfect for them. It was perfect for me. Let's face it.
look at her back wall. It's perfect for everyone. Look, I mean, she has that's all fan art. That's like
all my walls. I could give you a full 360.
Oh, but, my gosh.
Oh, that's a good one. I love that one.
I love it.
But anyway, it put me on the map. It made it so that other people were willing, you know, because before they'd be like, but what have you done? Like, you know what I mean? Because I couldn't get cast in a traditional way. So this was like, all of a sudden there was this vote of confidence, like, oh, well, if Ryan Murphy thinks she's okay, then, you know, give her a chance. And, you know, and so the rest has sort of been history. So, you know, anyway, the point, you're absolutely right. I do a lot with a little, which for a long time was my weakness, which was my sort of Achilles heel. And now it's like my, you know, superpower.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Well, what about you, Clayton? Like, how did you get into the mind space of Lester?
Well, a lot of times, you know, a pitfall for an actor is to fall into sort of the negative aspects of a character. And I just try to think of the positive sides of him, that he was sensitive. He is a survivor. He's strong-willed. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of time to prepare for the role. And, you know, it was just about keeping it as simple as possible. I, too, reached out to my coach. Anytime I have something of substantial side, I definitely reach out to my coach to work with them. His name's Jamie Walrab, shout out. And a lot of what we worked with, because it was so short, the time that I had to prepare for it, was that this character lives in this world that he doesn't necessarily want to live in. And so he thinks that this is the answer, but he's constantly being told that this is the answer. And so it's, you know, a lot of it was just, you know, 2 + 2 = 5, 2 + 2 = 5, 2 + 2 = 5. Actually, no, it doesn't. It equals 4. No, it can't equal 4, because I'm going to get my eye gouged out. 2 + 2 = 5, 2 + 2 = 5. And yeah, so it was sort of that along with just David wrote a great script, and he put a lot of clues in there for us as actors to help lead us along the way. And the biggest clue I got from David about Lester was in that scene with Sarah and Miss Stanhope, when Sarah discovers the book, Community. And she's like, oh my God, did that creepy guy give that to you? And she's like, oh, Lester, he's not creepy. He's just sad.
Yeah.
And, yeah. That was it. Lester was very sad. He was very sad over the death of his wife, this woman who would help acclimate him to this community, who helped, make it okay in his mind to be here and to stop fighting and to actually give in. And, for me, that was a lot. That was very powerful. And to just be able to look within inside myself and find moments of that sadness. I worked with this archetype of the sad little boy. I think that a lot of us have this archetype within us as humans of this sad child, that we've all been sad as children, and we've had these moments in our lives that have shaped us, whether we know it or not, have been tied to this sadness. And that was something that I was able to run with, that I was able to sort of plant the seed and use as my foundation, and then just use my imagination to fill the rest in, I took an acting class, and we had Jim Caviezel come talk to us once. And he was said that, for me, it's about finding how the character's the same and how we're similar, that you find those things that you can relate to and you put that in your part. And then the other stuff, you just paint it in. Just paint it in with your imagination.
That's such a good way to look at that. Wow.
It makes it simple. Good acting is simple.
Because I was going to ask, is it hard to go in and out of a character? And if y'all play pranks on set, or if there's any way that y'all break up getting, out of that character?
Go ahead, Alok. It was a fun set. All I gotta say, it was fun.
15 days initially, you don't have a lot of time to do anything. The only thing we did that was kind of funny, I think, was that, and I know he's gonna probably hate me for saying it, but so Giles Matty is like the Brian character, right? So he's amazing, and the cat that we had involved with the movie is also named Giles.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that in a little bit, but go ahead.
we'll come to that. But Giles is the cat, right? We also had another actress, Haley Giles, who was the nurse/seductress of Sarah's father, right? Mm-hmm. She's also a Giles, let's say. But what happened was that that fucking cat was so fucking good, right? That one take Giles. We called it one take Giles, that cat, right? So we would, for a joke, bring Giles Matty up to the set, when we're shooting whatever the cat was doing. And we're like, fucking look at that cat. That fucking cat's amazing. One take Giles over there. That's what that cat's called. What the fuck happened to you?
No, please. Please, no. Hold on. Don't stop rolling. I'm going to take it back. Okay? Hold on. Okay, here we go. Giles is great.
We're making jokes.
We are making jokes.
I mean, that guy is like a treasure of fucking England or whatever the fuck he's from. But I'm literally saying, though, he is so good, though, that us telling him this was an insult to some extent, but we're making jokes. All jokes,
Yeah.
Anyway. He pulls off a full on American accent. Would you ever think he was British?
No.
So in between takes, he'd be like, I don't think that went quite well. He's like, oh, what just happened? You know what I mean?
I was actually quite jealous of the bromance between Giles and Terry on set. I was just like, what about me? What about me?
I'm sort of used to being the class clown. And so when all of a sudden there were other people that were stealing my thunder, I was like, oh, okay.
Taylor Nichols and him were very fun together, actually.
Taylor, I said Terry. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. I feel like an ass face now. I said,
No. But I was going to say this. I'm literally the go-between between those two. they're assholes to each other, which is very hilarious. They're just like always. Like, Taylor Nichols. What's that? Sorry.
I said, but Clayton isn't, and yet he just was.
Exactly. I was.
But going back to Taylor Nichols and the Giles Maddie like feud, let's call it. I'm always the in between for them. And so it's always a thing where, like, Taylor Nichols is like, oh, my gosh, could you tell our dear friend, Giles Maddie, that I really enjoyed his role in Ford versus Ferrari? I think it was, like, 2 minutes, so I didn't quite notice him at all. But tell him, give my best, you know? And then I'll, in turn, go back to, you know, from his side and be like, all right, hey, listen, Taylor, Giles is telling me that you were in basically The Walking Dead, and you spent like 3 months on set, and they used you for like 10 minutes of the fucking shoot. He would have loved to have seen you more. Oh, by the way, go fuck yourself. Like, that's what it is, like, all the time. And I'm happy to be a go between. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
We were just on a podcast it was Stardust. Starburst. Starburst, which is kind of like England's Fangoria, if you will. And Naomi was in there and different people. But the point of it is that this kind of back and forth is going all the time. And you will see it very soon again, is the idea. But it's even funnier than what I'm talking about right now. So anyways. So, listen,
I cannot imagine.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But at the same time, I will say this, you know, I was acutely aware that this was a very low budget movie, and we were basically using the money had mortgaged his already paid for house, allegedly. Okay. So we're not trying, I'm not trying to just like burn his money, basically. So, you know, in general, like, if, you know, Hollywood producers are listening, we don't want it out there that like we're just like joking around on set. Like, obviously the set is a familial, jovial place, but we're there to do work. And, you know, especially given the fact that everyone was like a first-time director, first-time producers, like, it was, you know, we had our nose to the grindstone. We had, you know, we had to make our days, and we did. It was amazing.
We did because of people like Naomi Grossman and also like Clayton Hoff. I mean, and also, of course, like, you know.
And
like,
one take Giles, the cast.
And fucking one take fucking Giles. That was the magic that came with the whole thing. I mean, sorry. Go ahead. You were going to say some stuff.
I just wanted, okay, so I'm going to put an intro in this because there will be some spoilers because I have to ask this question. I know the cat's fine. Like, a cat is fine, but that scene freaked me out more than the nails in the hands, more than when Sarah's character was, like, that scene got me the most. And so I was wondering, what did y'all do to map in, to make it look like that?
I would tell you there was a lot of weird shit that we had to do because... Initially, we shot it one way, and that was one of the things when we did the reshoots, that we went and got back more stuff. So literally, like, we brought an oven. And a lot of stuff was done in my own house, for example. So we brought that same oven we had that they kept someplace, and they put that oven, like, in my garage. And then they made, like, smoke billow out of it. And so we got, like, another kind of couple different shots that we didn't have before, right? So we did that. We also did like a lot of computer stuff, like, I mean, video effects or whatever, VHX, where we had smoke billowing out of certain parts of it and stuff like that. That was another add-on with that. When we came down to actually understanding that scene, it was a thing where we did test screenings and the whole thing. We had to understand that people didn't want to see any more of the cat than we showed them, right? Yeah. So that was a big part of it. Like 75% of the audience said, we don't need to see any more. 25% did want to see it, but they were hardcore horror fans, and our movie's not a hardcore horror movie. So that's what we understood as well, right? So those are all things that kind of like mixed into that whole scene and so forth. I hope I explained, answer the question.
Yeah. But I know y'all keep saying like it was a low budget, you know, film and stuff, but you cannot tell it. You cannot at all to me. I mean, I know I'm just somebody watching at home that doesn't know much about this and that, but it didn't look to me like a low budget movie at all.
Well, I would say our cinematographer did a great job in working with, you know, following our lead actress, Nicole, that, you know, a lot of the film, it's a lot of close-ups. Everything's, you know, you're seeing the story through her eyes. And, you know, thank God we got Nicole. Like, she was so amazing in this role. And that was able to carry it through that you don't notice because the camera's so in close on her. And she's carrying that most of the way. And, you know, you don't have to pay for all the big time effects for it. You just need that nice, you know, 85 millimeter lens and that great actor, that great actress who's going to carry it.
The truth of the matter is that, like, you know, basically Nicole Brighton Bloom is this movie, right? Like, if you think about it, like, she, like, everything we're doing is through her eyes. Mm-hmm. Her eyes are so big and awesome and amazing, and she just can cry 8 different ways. And the truth is, she wasn't cast at the beginning of it. Like, and Naomi made an allusion to it, but I'll just tell you the story real quick.
I don't want to tell the story as a loke.
What?
I kind of want to tell the story as a loke.
You tell the story, but tell it better. I'm gonna go. I gotta pee so badly right now because this has been a long story. But like,
Do you want me to tell it like you would exactly?
Okay, listen.
Yeah. I'll do a hybrid Naomi Loke storytelling.
No. You do the story and you tell it from the, you know, the whole like Marina de Ray, blah blah blah. Blah. All right. Naomi's gonna start talking and telling the story. Here.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what the segue was into the segment though.
It was about the casting because we asked a bit about it being low budget. Okay. You couldn't tell because
the disaster that happened. Whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we just super duper lucked into Nicole. As it turns out, they had cast another actress prior, mostly because she had a really impressive Instagram following, which is sadly the way they cast these days, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, I mean, believe me, for people who've, you know, like Clayton and I, you know, who've like gone to school, you know, we'd like get a time and like, oh, but we're not a Vine star, so, you know, anyway, the point is they had put an offer out to an actress who was on some like CW like vampire show, which Loke has never seen, but like he saw her Instagram. I was like, you know, saw dollar signs, knew that she would put them into the black immediately. So even though Nicole Brighton Bloom was David Marmer's first choice, and you know, they should be listening to their director, and yet it's all about the money and making the money grubbing producer hands. So basically, this actress, who will remain nameless, in fact, I don't even know what her name is, so all the more reason why I won't say it. So she, in her writer, she needed this, like, feminine energy drink, which apparently wasn't going to, they actually called the company, and by the way, I don't even have a writer. Like, I think that's so, like, I'm, like, this whole story just, like, blows my mind, because no, I don't, Alok. Don't look at me like that.
I was looking at the drink I was going to drink just now. I was like, should I drink this right now? Yeah, I will drink it right now.
Enjoy your drink. So, in any case, the feminine energy drink was not going to be like able to be delivered for, you know, a couple days. And, you know, Alok, again, he's like such a diligent producer. He's like, well, we need some energy drink. We can't be without. So, of course, like, who goes to go, like, pick up extra energy drink? follow Mitra. Like, he's not busy enough being like an extra and a this and a that and a, like doing everything else, mm-hmm. even running social media, allegedly. I mean, allegedly. Come on. He's amazing. In any case, so here he is, like, at this, like, Marina Del Rey Gelson's, which for people out of Los Angeles won't probably mean much, but it's like a fancy grocery store in the, like, way, Timbuktu.
Actually, to Gelson's, it's actually a lovely grocery store.
Lovely grocery store. There's nothing against it. But, I mean, you really went to great lengths for this lady, because...
Well, should I start...
I won't even drive to the Valley for my own good friend. I would never even visited my friend Alok in his new home.
Should I continue the story from here, let's say?
No, I got this. So, there they are. They're... No, you've been replaced. Take a break. So they're in the Gelson's, like, waiting for more energy, or they beg the manager, like, hey, do you have some extra in the bag? He's like, I really don't think so. He's like, no, but please, like, really, I think you probably do. So sure enough, while they're waiting for the manager to go pick up some new energy, like, feminine energy drink, they get a phone call. It's this lady's agent calls to say she's out. Not only is she out, but her boyfriend or whatever friend, we don't know their exact relation, but she has managed to get her own friend to be cast in the role of Brian. So with this one 30-second phone call without explanation, they have lost not only their lead, but also the romantic, you know, co-star. So they're freaking out. What does Alok do when he's like panicking? Drink. So they had straight figure this out, because you never, like, no way to, like, sort of figure out how you're just gonna, you know, you've just mortgaged your already paid for a house with all this money, and now you're losing it, so maybe have a second round, right? Give me a double. So they're figuring it out, I want to say right around then, I could be wrong on this. Now I might need, no, I don't need your help.
You're right.
Find out, they get a phone call that the lady that was slated to play Mrs. Stanhope, her husband has collapsed, was rushed to the hospital, dead. Done. She's out. They're like, ah! They literally just lost three of their leads. Like, just like, God.
The Monday before the Thursday we were shooting, and then yes. We actually backed the whole thing up a week, and now, Naomi, I don't know if you have any more story to tell, but...
Oh, I have plenty. So then, so they ended up deciding to, okay, so we won't start Thursday, we'll start Monday, that bottom 4 days, which is still nothing. They managed to reach out to Nicole Bryden-Bloom, which was, she was such, amazing. She was, like, on the first plane out, ended up, she had 3 hours to rehearse with David. That's it. She's in, like, literally every frame of this film, and she had 3 hours to prepare with our director. It's nothing. Then there was this
beautiful character.
She basically, Alok basically, like, reached out to, you know, agencies and whatnot, like, trying to keep them open, you know what I mean? They try to close at 6, but he's like, keep them open, you know? And managed to get, you know, some reels of some various actresses, among them Susan Davis, who plays Mrs. Stanhope. He watched a reel, and at the end there was, like, a phone number, which he called, thinking obviously it would be like an agent or a manager or someone. No, it's her, and she answers, and like, Alok is totally taken aback, like, oh my God, this is highly unprofessional. He's like, listen, I know this is unprofessional, but I'm gonna pitch in the movie, and I'm gonna pitch us. So she, like, hears the whole thing. She's like, oh, well, I've never been in a cult movie before. So she, like, in, like, literally, their phone calls at, like, 9:30 a.m. They signed her at 11:30, like that. And then Giles Matty, same thing. They found him through Gersh, who was very helpful through this whole process. And, you know, Giles was actually en route from I want to say San Francisco down to Los Angeles that day. So he didn't have the time to actually like sit and actually read the script properly. So he just read like, you know, his lines and was like, I'm in, which I've explained to Alok on many occasions is actually very common. In fact, I did that just today. Today, I had an audition for a movie, and granted, it was a movie, an audition, not an offer, but yeah, I full on just like skimmed my parts, was like, yes, and here we go. So it's not actually that uncommon, but I do, you know, let's just say I feel pretty confident that Giles like read the whole movie before he actually acted in it. But no, before we actually like accept an offer, like, fuck it. We just want to work. You know what I mean?
I can say this. Yeah. Naomi Grossman has actually done exactly the part that I usually do so specifically and so amazingly well. She girlfriend is down. She is so good. Like we've been on so many podcasts together, Clayton and Naomi and myself and this and that. Holy shit. She just fucking did that. It was so good.
You know what I propose we do for the next one? We need to play like that game, is it a celebrity or whatever, where you put like a post-it on your face and like we'll have post-its and it'll be like mine will say like Alok, yours will say Naomi, Clayton, you can be, you know, Taylor or Giles,
Nicole.
Why not?
And we need to like literally answer as that person. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be great. That'd be great. But Paige, by the way, I'm glad you got to experience that because that was a fucking amazing sort of like.
That was the G version of what Alok would have said. Alok would have said exactly that with like 20 million more expletives. So that was really the version my mom wanted to hear. That was for you, mom.
That's completely true. It's completely true. I can guarantee you this. Anyway, Paige, do you have more questions at all or what's going on?
I do. Let's see. Okay, I have to know, is there an alternate ending movie that y'all made, or is there a sequel, please?
I'll answer that question, because we need to be very quiet about a lot of it, and it's like this. To your question, there are three different endings to the film, actually, of which we will reveal nothing to you, sadly. Because we are trying to basically keep that for the Blu-ray one day when it happens. The good Blu-ray, not the one we've released right now, which is what we had to do and we had the budget to do. But there'll be another Blu-ray at some point, you'll see. So that's one thing.
Okay.
Secondly, as far as a sequel, fuck yeah, there's a sequel. There's a sequel for sure. We are trying to figure this out right now. We can't tell you anything about it. Try to J.J. Abrams the shit out of this, right? Where, you know, what's in the box? Can't tell you what's in the box. Will you pay to see what's in the box? We pay to see what's in the box, you know? So that's what we can tell you about it. But we have lots of great ideas. And just because, you know, you've seen people die over here and whatever else, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I mean, is Lester dead? He got shot. You think he got shot?
Well, yeah. You know? Did he shoot someone else?
I don't know.
We didn't see it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, okay, again, we can't tell you much about it, so why ask more questions about it? But I can just tell you that there's a lot of different ways we can go with this and a lot of different ways we want to go with this. And I'm going to tell you this, even specifically, it's going to be a much bigger movie than the first one was.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. I'm really excited because that cliffhanger, I was like, this is not cool. Not cool. I wanted more.
Well, I mean, here's actually a big thing too, if you don't mind. Make sure at the beginning of this whole sort of like interview and so forth, if you don't mind, just put a big thing that this is very spoilerish and the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, and we'll see what happens. I know we're not typically your sort of normal fare, necessarily what you usually, you know, sort of talk about and so forth. But we're very sort of like, you know, very happy that you chose to bring us on.
Hello, I'm honored that all of you decided to come on my little show and talk to me. And like, honestly, I figured you'd all be like divas. I guess that's like what people mostly think. And
we weeded that out early. We weeded that out at Gelson's Marina Del Rey.
Yeah. But you're all so laid back and fun, and you just remind me of my friends at home. I mean, it's just really nice to talk to people that are humble and cool and laid back. I love it.
Thank you. Listen, I lived in Jackson, Mississippi, like I told you before, and like, you know, Clayton lived in a smaller town, like, you know, up north in California.
Corcoran.
Yeah. And Naomi, you know, she's at her.
I've been to Jackson. I've been to Northern California.
Yeah.
So she knows what's what.
I've been around.
So, oh my gosh, Naomi, I have to ask you, what is about Peter Lawford's ghost? I have to ask you this.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Wow, it made it. It's great. A thing.
Put us here, whatever. Let's do it. Answer the question, Naomi Grossman.
Well, so evidently you've done a little research and listened to some podcasts.
Well, I did do a little research before. Kind of Googled a little bit to see what I could possibly throw at y'all.
Well, so basically I live in Peter Lawford's last residence.
Okay.
Which, it's really interesting. Like, you know, the complex, I mean, it's a condo situation. And so people, you know, it's called the Lawford. Like, we all, like, really own the fact that Peter lived here. You know, we have, like, a picture of the Rat Pack, like, you know, framed at the front.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
But it's, like, it's so funny. Like, he's actually a character in this new one-woman show that I'm working on, which...
Oh, wow.
But when I've, you know, in my research for that, I've read, you know, his biographies, and sure enough, they write, like, when he moved to this, you know, crappy little apartment and what, you know, in West Hollywood, like, he hit rock bottom. Like, it's one of those things where I'm like, you know, I feel so fancy, like, living in these places. Little did I know, like, this was actually where he, like, came to die. Like, this was not, it was not a good year. He was only here for 1 year. And during the course of that year, he spent some time at the Betty Ford Center because, you know, he was, like, a notorious, like, I mean, he was on a strict vodka Quaalude cocaine diet. In fact, even had cocaine, like, helicoptered into the Betty Ford Center, like, behind in the, you know, sticks out back. Which is insane. Like, it's a rehab, for God's sake.
Oh my God.
He was not trying to get better. He was just, you know, following orders. And I mean, it was not a happy. I'm always, like, very cautious of when I tell this story. In fact, the last time I did, we had a total blackout. Like, we were in the middle of talking about, like, scary, spooky, paranormal things that happen, and my entire, like, entire block went black. So I'm really treading lightly here as I tell this story. But, you know, I've had some sort of, like, little run-ins with him. I had an actual official ghost hunter here once to assess this. Yeah, well, I don't know if you remember that show, The Girls Next Door. It was a reality show.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
It was basically Hugh Hefner's three main girlfriends.
Okay.
Among them, Bridget. Oh my God! It's like I went black, but I didn't. Tumblr battery on my. It's okay. No, but among them, Bridget Marquardt, who is, you know, she was like the smart one at the mansion, my friend. But since, you know, her time in Playboy, she has gotten really into, the paranormal, and she actually has a podcast herself called Ghost Magnet. And so she interviewed me once there, and I of course told her all my Peter Lawford stories, and she was like, well, we gotta come over, I'm gonna come with my little, like, you know, kit. And so sure enough, she like came and like buzzed around the place, and you know, of course it was like going crazy because she's a friggin' playmate, you know what I mean? Like, she's a Playboy bunny, and that is Peter's type. Like, this guy, he was what he had, like, you know, Sammy's girl, Dean's girl, you know, even Ava Gardner, like Frank's girl, you know what I mean? You name it. He had all the starlets in Hollywood, including the best head in Hollywood, Nancy Reagan. True story.
Oh my God.
I kid you not.
Oh my gosh.
That's the good head in Hollywood? Nancy best Reagan? Head
in Hollywood. Yep.
Wow.
So,
okay.
The point is, you know, of course, you know, is the thing's gonna go off for Bridget because, like, you know, he likes the ladies. He especially likes the like blonde, buxom ones that live at the mansion. So, you know. Anyway, I'll keep it short, but I will say that he was quite dormant. He's been mostly dormant. There was only two real times that I remembered seeing him. And that was most recently on the anniversary of his death, which was the 35th anniversary. I literally came home at like midnight on the night before he died. And it was like the lights were flickering like crazy. And this was literally his anniversary of his death. And I took a video for Bridget and she's like, oh shit, like that's a thing.
Yeah.
And sure enough, then the next night, so our lights just sort of magically turn on when it gets to be dark, you know, if they're on a timer or whatever. And yeah. So sure enough, on the day he died, like on Christmas Eve, he died on Christmas Eve, like at, you know, 5 or 6 or whenever, when it starts to get dark in the winter, the lights, you know, came on and they were flickering again. And then that entire thing, the entire light came crashing to the ground, like out of the socket, all of it, like the all of it.
What did you do? Were you scared out of your mind?
So this was Christmas Eve. I was actually home. I was going to like a little soiree. I was expecting someone, actually, and there was a huge, I heard a knock, like a huge crash, which, I mean, like I said, I was expecting a friend. So I was like, okay. So I went to the front door and like half wondered if it would be Peter Lawford. And I looked out the thing and, you know, I was relieved it wasn't. But then I was like, what was that? So I opened the door and that's when I saw the entire light out of the, you know, on the ground, which again, it would be one thing if like the bulb was still in and the wiring was it, the whole thing was, it was like a clean break, which was so weird to me. And then the other night that we had a little run in, it's too long a story, but basically I'll leave it like this. The bullet points are, I moved into his home, had kind of my own like little breakdown, personal sort of in my own depression, which basically entailed me not going out, not having fun, not being the like fun Naomi that, you know, you have come to know over the door. And that was the first night in 9 months since I'd moved here that I finally just like really let my hair down. Like I really like I just like was myself again for the first time in 9 months. I'm sure like for those who've ever like been depressed, you know. So sure enough, the height of that night at the height of this like bacchanal, the lights flickered. He always with the lights. That's why I got so freaked out the last time when we had that total blackout. But to me, I know a lot of people will listen to this and be like, call an electrician. I beg to differ. I believe that was Peter Lawford in that moment telling me, you know what? Live your life. Like, thanks for moving in. Now enjoy my freaking apartment already.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I really had it until that night. So, you know, especially now having like, I feel like I know him because I've read his book. You know, I know so much about him. Like, I know so much about him. Like, you
and he knows, you know.
Exactly. Like, I'm sleeping in the bedroom, you know. So, anyway, I feel like he's a friendly ghost. He likes me. We're good. Like, so.
Well, he's a friendly ghost until he's not. But, great Peter Lawford's ghost is actually a great
Peter Lawford's ghost.
Great Peter Lawford's ghost is going to be a thing that we use to hear into to whoever knows what time, whatever.
It kind of reminds me, have you guys have seen Big Mouth? Duke Ellington's ghost is a character on that show. Who's kind of a ridiculous character, but you're right. We need a Peter Lawford's ghost.
Great Peter Lawford's ghost.
Maybe in apartment 1BR2 bathroom, keeping it fresh.
I'm not saying we can't include him in some of this. I mean, just because.
Giles could do the voiceover.
Oh, that's a great idea.
All right, listen. I have to get out of here. I have to go. I think my wife is like, you know, calling for me and I have to do this stuff, but listen, it was such a nice, talk and so forth. And I mean, is there any last questions you might have for all of us? Let's say, or
just one more is what is everybody's upcoming projects? Is there anything that y'all want to say that y'all are doing, you know, coming up, or is everything pretty much on hold because of quarantine?
You guys go first.
I mean, yes and no. Hollywood has been hit really hard, obviously. I did have two whole auditions today, which was like gangbusters. Like, it felt like a normal day for the first day in many, many, many months for me. That said, you know, there are obviously like projects I did well before all this that are now finally coming out. So that's exciting. Namely, I voiced the Mafia series. There's the Mafia game that actually comes out on Friday. So if anyone's a gamer, you can hear the thick Chicago mobster wife, you know, voice. It would be interesting. Yeah, I mean, as Clayton can say, there's so many, you do things and then sometimes they never come out. Sometimes they come out like years later. Like, so it just so happens like this, like Sky Sharks, like some, like, it's literally like this sci-fi movie I shot in Germany, like two years ago is finally coming out. Or like it just for the first time like a week ago. No one's talking about it, which I think is actually a sign. I think it's probably terrible. It was all CGI. It was all green screen. Like, I think there's a reason we're not talking about it, but I am, so whatever. It's literally about like sharks that fly and that are like put there by Nazis. So, like, like Sharknado 2.0. Like,
yeah, I was going to say Sharknado vibes going on.
Yeah. Aside from that, though, the thing I'm really, truly excited about, Alok mentioned as well, I have a new one-woman show, which I'm working on, which, you know, at this point, I'm now at the, like, tweaking, you know, almost production phase, which is very exciting.
Awesome.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know what that's going to look like with COVID, you know, because it is technically a live show, but you know, at the end of the day, I want to sell it as a 1-hour comedy special anyway, so maybe that's more likely to happen than it would otherwise. So
yeah,
anyway, that's what I have up my sleeve.
Awesome. What about you, Clayton?
So I have I work a lot with the American Film Institute here in Los Angeles, probably the best film school in the world. I hope I'm not like offending any other filmmakers and their alma maters.
No, it's one of the most amazing ones. Yeah. I went to USC, but I wasn't actually a film major there. So, I mean, long and short, you are talking good talk.
And so I did a film called Progeny, a short film. It's a sci-fi film that filmed recently at Fantasia, which is the same film festival that 1BR premiered at. It's actually going to be playing at, I feel like I'm going to say it wrong, Alok, you will correct me if I say it wrong, Stitches?
Stitches
in Spain. Yeah. And so I did another.
Interesting enough, you've been in both the one and two top film sort of like horror genre festivals in the world. You've been at one and two. You've been there. Amazing.
Yeah. So it's going to be showing there, which is great. And then they, the director is a guy named Justin Daring. And I did another film, a dark comedy called Witchin, by a director writer by the name of Christina Diamantura. I'm probably saying that wrong. I'm really sorry if you're listening. I'm bad with names. I'm sorry, Taylor, not Terry. It's going to be showing at LA Shorts Film Festival. And I have another film through AFI, another thesis film, called Fort Irwin, dealing with a combat veteran dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder that's making its way through the film festival circuit right now. And that was directed by a very talented director by the name of Quinn Else. So a couple smaller films going through the festival circuit. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait to see everything that y'all do in the future. And do you plan on going back to American Horror Story in the future?
You know, I don't know anything about it. I know that there is a season 10. There's talk of it. So, you know, there's always a chance. Like, I was back for 8. So, You know, I never know. I will say this, because people always ask me, and I'm like, And yeah. I kind of have to say that regardless. But, you know, if you want a character back on a show or not, or there for the first time, let the producers know. Like, let your fingers do the walking. Like, you know, tweet directly at the showrunners and producers and creators and, you know, whatever the verified account is. There is someone paid at that network to pay attention to what fans want and what they don't want. So, you know, if you don't want to see any more of me, then just step away from the computer. Like, you know, I don't know, read a book. But the fact is, yeah, I mean, obviously Pepper died in season 2 and it didn't matter. I was still back. Yeah. So it's always possible.
Yeah. Well, Yeah.
And believe it or not, you have more control over that than I do. So.
Well, I'm definitely going to be writing. I'm going to be a total Karen. So Alok, what do you have planned coming up?
Well, we have a lot of things coming up that we can't talk about, sadly. It's like one of those things where you're like, you know, oh my gosh, I want to tell you what's going on. But J.J. Abrams is the shit out of this. So that's sort of what it is. We have like 3 movies over the next year we want to shoot. And let's see what happens. And that's what's going on. But I wish I could tell you more. I honestly do.
I get it. I get it.
You know, keep it secret, right? What's in the box? I can't tell you what's in the box. What's in the box? You'll pay to see what's in the box, right?
So yes. We'll see.
But listen, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you, my lady. My Mississippi lady, who's like kind of like akin to me in that regard. And I wish we could have caught. Well, I think we'll talk more in the future, actually, to be honest.
That would be great.
Enough information on this sort of download we did with you.
Thank you all so much for just taking your time just to be here. It means a lot to me. So
you're very welcome for having us.
It really is.
Well, yeah. I hope you all have a great night, and thank you so much for coming and hanging out.
Definitely.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Get home safely. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Night.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.